following episode of Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It has been brought to you by Acme Smoked Fish. Acme Smoked Fish is North America's leading producer of smoked seafood. Sourcing only the highest quality materials from around the globe, Acme has been a sustainable steward of the seafood industry for over 55 years. From traditional smoked salmon to fine delicacies like smoked sable and trout, Acme is the authority on smoked fish. For more on the Acme, Blue Hill Bay, or Ruby Bay brands, visit www.acmesmokedfish.com.
Fish heads, fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum. Fish heads, fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum.
Whoa, welcome back, Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. I'm your host, Ben Sargent, and today I am here with Ryan Roberts, who has done some hardcore sailing. I met this guy in a bar, and we started chatting about how to catch a fish off a moving sailboat when you can't be standing there with a rod and reel because you're sailing, but you haven't eaten in a few days. You have to devise some kind of a system that is going to catch the fish and not basically have it, you know, get jerked so hard back by the speed of your boat that you lose the fish. So, welcome, man. Thanks for coming on. We are enjoying like a beautiful day here in Bushwick, and I have to take this phone call. Sorry, this is my family. Just kidding. sorry about that. And beautiful day in Bushwick, and we're gonna be making some tacos, fish tacos. And you didn't make a ton of fish tacos on the trip, but you had like your go-tos.
Right.
What was like the easiest fish meal to make, and I guess to consume?
The easiest thing was blackened fish, just blackened fish, maybe some rice. Hot skillet.
Yep.
Whatever spices you like. Throw it in there for 20 seconds on the side.
Right.
You could do it in between taking waves.
Right. right. So you had one of those like clip-on grills, or how did you do it?
Well, we've got a range and an oven in the galley.
In the galley.
And it's gimbaled, so it's on a hinge. So it kind of rolls back and forth, stays.
So all your pots don't spill.
Kind of. That. Unless kind you of. Take a really big wave, and then everything just comes right at you.
Right.
But yeah, so we just get the skillet hot.
Yep.
Chunk the fish in and
go for it.
Maybe we got some rice going, maybe not.
And if it's blackened, can you make like a ceviche or something from that?
We usually just do the ceviche just straight raw.
Yeah.
Blackens good sandwich or just in a
So paper towel. I see. And then but then you would throw in your veggies with whatever, or did you even have too many veggies on board?
A lot of times it was just a big chunk of blackened
fresh fish in a bowl, basically.
Yeah. Sometimes some rich just crackers. A chunk of raw.
Yeah. You know,
just sushi.
Yeah. Just sushi. That is awesome. Tell me about this rig. Let's see this rig. You guys are this is pretty awesome, I have to say.
Okay, this was taught to us by this old salty cruiser in Key West named Norm, who's been around the world twice in his boat.
Doesn't look like much, I have to say.
It doesn't. it's surgical tubing,
100-pound
test,
and
whatever lure is good for the area. These are, what we've got is the little squid style with a little bit of a mahi-mahi skin on it.
For
a
flavor.
Scent. Yeah, a little flavor.
Yep, okay.
And basically you suck 75 feet of the 100-pound test inside 25 feet of surgical tubing.
Yep.
Put whatever, and you kind of lash that together with barrels on the end. Big heavy-duty stuff, because you never know what you're going to get. And
so you're saying the line is going through the tubing? Is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, you can see it kind of squiggled up in there.
Okay.
And what happens is fish hits it.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of acts like a drag. The fish can swim on it taut. And the surgical tubing stretches out.
It's going to stretch.
Until the point where all the line is, it's straight.
But are you saying the mono is also going to stretch?
No.
No.
The whole tube stretches until you get to the length of the mono, and then the mono picks up the whole load.
I got you.
But so
the mono is like the backing.
Yeah.
And the tubing is like what it's going to hit first.
Just the drag. So it's just using that as a spring. So it's like you're,
the drag on your reel.
It's exactly like the drag on the reel. It keeps... So the fish swims up and tries to spit the lure out. It sucks it back in. If he tries to swim off, it gives you that.
Plays him sort of. He's playing himself.
He's playing himself, and and it's not a hard jerk too. It's soft, so it can't tear out of his mouth,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. It's a soft mouth fish.
Right.
So it's caught us a lot of fish.
That is awesome. And I mean, you know, when you can, you turn back and pull up your line, and sometimes there's a fish on there.
You know, it's usually like an hour after you've forgotten about it.
Right.
There's a fish back there. Wow, that's awesome. Otherwise, it's, you know, you look at it every 2 minutes,
yeah,
and there's nothing there.
So you have to forget about it for the fish. Yeah, got it. And you would use this anytime you guys were looking for a fish?
Pretty much. Yeah. Tend to be, especially in the Bahamas, somewhere in deep water, so try not to use it less than 100 feet. Mm-hmm. Anywhere there's a reef. If this thing's trailing in the water and there's a barracuda anywhere near it, you've got a barracuda on the line. Then you got to haul them in and get them out. It's kind of a pain.
That's a little scary.
Yeah.
And then can you eat a barracuda? I mean,
the Bahamians do. They have a lot of, because they eat all the reef fish, the little reef fish. Those little reef fish have a lot of the ciguatera, seafood toxins.
Uh-huh.
So barracudas are really known for having a lot of bad, like, ciguatera toxicity.
Sure.
Not good to eat, but people do. Okay. We didn't.
Okay. So you'd be going for mahi-mahi. What else would you catch on this
mahi-mahi? We had some wahoo. Yeah. They're a little harder. They've got better teeth, so you had to use a wire leader.
I saw that little football.
That was the first fish we caught with our rig, was this little football, this little blackfin tuna that's, you know, that's about as big as a football.
That's good eating.
And, well, you know...
Not so much?
We're trying to clean it. I'm trying to clean it on the back deck. We've got a gasoline can for our dinghy back there, and I'm back there with this fillet knife, and I fillet it, and then a couple minutes later I smell gas. I'm like, I don't know what that was. I had punctured the gas can with the tip of the fillet knife.
Oh man.
And I'm like, no, the fish is cool. The fish is cool.
Going all over your fish.
And we cooked it up, and it's surprising how little gasoline it takes to really screw up a fish.
I know. I've tried to siphon off a gas tank before, taking a whole mouthful of that stuff. Yeah. Oh man, is that powerful. Interesting. Okay, well, this is cool. And so how did you guys get into sailing? You did this with your wife, right?
Yeah. I mean, Mary. We did this we're kind of into sailing and we're doing some trips when we were living in DC, doing trips out to Annapolis and kind of borrowing, stealing her boss's boat whenever they weren't on it, and going out whenever we could. And
and you guys were good sailors? Grew up sailing, or how did
I don't know if good's the word, but we grew up doing it to greater and lesser extent. It's probably little powerboat stuff more than anything.
Yeah, right.
But you know, we were into trying to do the sailing thing and being a lower footprint and a little more in tune with nature and everything like that. And so we kind of chartered a boat once to make sure we were both into it and we're gonna kill each other. And then we bought our boat. And
you didn't kill each other.
We didn't.
But on the trip, you probably did, almost.
Close. Yeah, close. Anchoring, you know, it's pretty mellow.
It's a little different to take a little weekend trip versus a journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, 5-day passages across the Gulf Stream or across the Gulf of Mexico. It's, it's close proximity, so you can't really get away from each other. Ugh. You can't be like, I'm going to the bar, I'm going to the store. No, you're right there.
And, you know, it's your captain, your first mate, your whatever, and then your lover and your everything.
Everything.
That's tough.
Yep.
Did what was like the worst situation you guys encountered when you were on that trip?
I think the worst, we on the way to New York, we left Miami calm for 6 days under motor.
And I've seen the boat. It's not a huge boat.
37 foot.
It's a nice boat, but it's not a big boat.
Yeah, it's not a huge, gigantic, you know, sailing schooner or anything like that. But capable. What a capable boat.
Yeah.
And Mary was on deck. It's night, and a squall rolls through. I come run up on deck to help. We're dropping the mainsail. The end of the boom comes down and it puts essentially like a 4-inch gash in the top of my head. And, you know, we didn't really know exactly what to do. I put my hand in my head, and I felt this squishy stuff, and I thought it was my brains.
Right.
I've got like an open, like brains on the open sea, and we're like 400 miles offshore.
Yeah.
So we're like 50 miles outside of helicopter range. So even
you guys aren't like ruffian survivalists that you know how to like do this stuff. This is like, okay, what do we do now, honey?
Well, I'm like, get the book. So we have this little book that came with our first aid kit.
Get the book.
And the boat's rolling around. She's reading it. How many fingers are you holding up? And what's going on? And and so she gives me the whole thing, and it's just like, oh, maybe it is your brains. I think I'm going to puke.
These are your brains I'm holding.
I'm like, are you sure? Let's be sure. Man. And so she ends up cleaning it out and tying the wound together with my own hair into these like little knots. Man. And then tying that shut with this dental floss. So we show up in port.
Yeah.
And the Beaufort, North Carolina. I've got these kind of like these like little braids sticking out the side of my head, all bloody, like little dental floss hanging out. People are like, and we're all just walking around eating ice cream, and people are looking at us kind of like.
By the time you made it back to shore, it was probably you're pretty good at that point, yeah.
It had closed up enough that it was too late for they would have to cut it back open to stitch it. So we were just kind of let it ride.
Good for her, man. That sounds like you had a nurse on board as well.
Well, she wanted to stitch it up, and my dad's a veterinarian, and before we left, he gave us this like suture kit, from the vet clinic. And I'm like, you're not sewing my head up 400 miles offshore in a rolling sea. And
sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's just pretty much sailing, right? Like, whatever you possibly think could go wrong is pretty much going to go wrong.
You get what you get. Yeah, you can't.
Except it's not going to be what you think. It's going to be something totally different from what you think.
Yeah.
Back to the eating and fishing thing. Did you, like, what were the other meals that you guys would prepare? Because I saw some stuff, some photos, which really looked like almost gourmet. I mean, it looked like you did some real cooking on board.
We did do a lot of real cooking. Mm-hmm. When you're actually doing offshore passages, you tend to keep it real simple, the blackened stuff, soup, crackers. But when we anchor up and we're just hanging out, we try to enjoy it.
Were you doing some fried stuff too?
We did. We fried some conch and made fried conch po' boys. We baked our own baguettes to eat them on, because I mean, you can't. It's hard to get fresh bread.
Sure,
it's real expensive. So we did that. Seafood crepes. All kinds of stuff. So you kind of have these like powdered milk, potatoes, onions, the stuff that keeps a long time, and then you just have some cookbooks and try to figure out what to make.
That's so awesome. Did you enjoy the sailing most, or do you enjoy the like? Okay, we made it to this port, and now we get to chill and like go fishing and do fun stuff.
I think it's a combination.
It is.
Because you get like the offshore, I'm sailing, it's hard, you're up for 24 hours a day, or
I don't like that. I just know I'm not built for that, man.
Watches, you know.
It just doesn't. I mean, it's exciting, but it's like, to me, it's terrifying. I just don't love it enough. You know what I mean? I mean, everyone talks about the romance of sailing. I'm like, there is none. You're sick. You smell. You're sticky. You're, you know, you're tired. You're.
That's what makes getting into port so much fun.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know,
go buy a handle of rum and then you have a great time.
I mean, I can sort of see that, like, you know, getting through not a crazy storm, but getting through something treacherous and, like, you know, that can be sort of exciting. But I think it's the monotony to me, which, you know, especially when you don't have wind and you're just out there and you're just like, you know, I really don't want to be out here anymore.
That part's hard, especially if you don't want a motor.
Right.
Maybe you go swimming, but you're worried about who knows what out there, drifting away from the boat.
Yeah. Sharks.
Sharks. You can read a book or you can do whatever, but you kind of got to be able to deal with that. But that part of boredom is always punctuated by some terror at a later point. So you learn to kind of like
enjoy those moments Were you, did you ever think of yourself as I'm a sailor and this is my type of personality that this is built for, or not? Or would you say you're like
I knew I wanted to try it, but I get seasick.
Yeah.
And that was the thing I didn't. Am I going to be able to deal with this?
Wow.
But the answer is if you're out for long enough, seasickness stops.
Right.
So you have to be able to get over every time you go out and get into 5-foot waves, like, yeah, going over the rail, feeding the fishes for a day or two.
Man.
The worst thing we did was to eat a can of chop suey.
Okay.
Not good stuff. Like right before going offshore to Key West, and the stuff was coming back up.
Both
two
of
hours
you.
Later.
Both
yeah.
of you were
yeah, both of
miserable.
Us. Oh. Mary doesn't get seasick that often. Right. That did it. The chop suey. Yeah.
Right. And what's amazing is A, you're still married, and B, you still live together, and C, you live together on the boat.
We do. Yeah.
And I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that's the most remarkable part of it all. I think, you know, everyone's like, yeah, I could probably do it. But then I'd never want to see my wife again, and we'd never talk to each other after that.
Yeah, there's like one island when you do the Pacific crossing, and it's like Divorce Island. Because these couples spend like a month at sea. It's like 3,000-mile passage.
Divorce
And they island. Get out there, and they're like, screw you, we're selling the boat, I'm out.
And all the worst parts of everyone's personality come right
Yeah,
up.
You got to deal with it.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to run.
And where are you guys anchored now?
Jersey City in Liberty Landing Marina, Jersey City.
And you intend to stay on the boat all winter long?
Yeah. Really? I just spent a lot of jack on a heater that I have to also install before it gets cold. So we're gonna stick it out.
That's wild.
Yeah,
I give you more credit for that than any of the other stuff. I mean, that's insane. Like winters on a boat, that's brutal.
It was one of the hardest parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't even imagine how you get a boat like that warm enough.
Yeah, I can't either.
You don't know how it's going to work.
I'm hoping it's going to work.
You're like, Ben, don't say that. It's going to be warm, damn it.
I hope Mary's not listening to this.
I hope Mary is listening to this. So you guys are, I mean, it's a really cool thing what you guys have done. Do you have other sort of routes planned out for your next voyage?
Every time we get bored or pissed or something, yeah. You know, we got this big book of world cruising routes, and you just kind of like open a page and see what's where we're going there.
Yeah,
and we go, let's go to Hawaii. And to go to Hawaii, you know, it's 1700 miles from here to Panama, and then 4500 miles, like 50 days at sea from there to Hawaii. Whoa. So we don't know. You know, everyone's dream is to sail around the world one day. Maybe sure. Maybe we'll do it.
Yeah. How do you guys make a living now? How is it that you're able to be here? Who's watching the boat? Where's Mary? How does that all work?
Mary's working. She's in advertising.
Okay.
I'm a naval architect. I design boats.
Okay.
There's not a lot of in the city area now.
Sure.
But, so I'm basically looking after the boat. So anybody out there that wants a boat designed, you know, let me know.
There's your chance right there.
There's my plug.
There you go. And anybody thinking about stealing a boat right now, there's one unattended over
there. There is. It's got a vicious 8-month-old puppy on it, too.
Oh, there you go.
Which we added to our
ours got stolen.
Really?
Yeah. We had it at North 3rd Street in Williamsburg, and we came down. The boat was gone. And hired a private detective. And this is a small boat, 27-foot Bristol, little sailboat. And the private detective... Basically, we saw the boat on the west side about a year later, and my friends are like, that's the boat. And I go, there's no way that's our boat. Like, that's in pretty nice shape. Well, the guy had been working on it for a year. And anyways, the private detective boarded the boat and found our knot tying book in it with our names in it.
Wow.
So he's like, well, you guys definitely have a case here. We understand that's your boat. The problem is, the thief has done more to register this boat in his name than you guys ever did. So it looks more like it's his than it is yours.
That's a good idea. I think I want to do that for someone from ours. Just get all this work out of the way.
Right? Yeah. So anyways, we got the boat back. It was amazing. It was amazing. The guy went to jail.
It's
even he was a fancy dude from the Upper West Side.
And he stole your boat?
And he stole our boat. And he now has a permanent record. It was grand larceny. It's no different from stealing a car.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy. Wow. I don't think his wife even knew that he had stolen a sailboat. It was crazy. Anyways, that is not what we're here to talk about. But we are going to take a quick break. We're going to thank Acme for sponsoring this episode. And we're going to enjoy this wonderful song about sailing.
I'm sailing away. Set an open course for the virgin sea. 'Cause I've got to be free. Free to face the life that's ahead of me. On board, I'm the captain. So climb aboard. We'll search for tomorrow on every shore. And I'll try, oh Lord, I'll try to carry on.
Catch it, cook it, and eat it. I'm here talking to Ryan Roberts, who has done some serious sailing, And we are in the midst of preparing some fish tacos. I would imagine looking at these vegetables and fruits in front of us, these are probably things that while sailing you don't have a lot of. When you do, it's probably they're gone in like the first few days, and then you're down to like the powdered milk.
Powdered milk.
All that.
The potatoes.
Yeah.
The onions.
Yeah. Let's get to work here quickly on this, because where is our... Oh, here. I'm going to give you this for a second. All right. We have this crazy underwater camera that we're using to shoot this entire episode. So there will be no sound from the camera, but since we're doing a radio show, we have sound, because Nat in the control room is adjusting our levels as we speak. So I'm going to throw on some tortillas, which of course don't fit in here at all, but I have a solution. We're just going to go right on the hot plate.
Right to the plate.
Yeah. That. Oh, I'm a little ahead of the game here. We have an entire fish to fillet. Right, I forgot about the fish.
Yeah.
That always happens here.
Whole fish tacos?
The other day I served a guy on the show, a master fisherman, chowder, and I forgot to put the fish in. He's like, where are the bluefish chugs? Speaking. I was like, oh man, I forgot the bluefish. Speaking of which, you're kind of a bluefish fanatic. You like bluefish, right?
I do. People look at me funny around here.
Yeah.
And I grew up in on the Gulf of Mexico in Florida, and down there you eat mullet, and I like mullet.
Mullet, right.
But mullet's like several orders lower than bluefish.
Right.
But, you know, bluefish is good. We blacken it, make burritos with it. Fried bluefish sandwiches.
You guys get the bluefish. Sorry, you guys get the bluefish that have been, you know, up here and are migrating now. I always think that's amazing that you're kind of getting the same fish that's spent time in Montauk. Very well may head right on down to you guys. Do you go back to Florida much? Or
I do. We do. We'll go down there this Thanksgiving for a week. And my dad's got a place on the. I've rented a place on the beach. We're going to go flounder gigging. So, nice. You know, it's like you basically walk out and look for a fluke with a spear and a light and then go for it.
Right. Okay, this is a, what do we have? We have a nice snapper here. A beauty of a snapper. Although I will say that there's a distinct fishy smell to it.
It's a little fishy.
Which you should avoid at all costs. Picking up a fish that smells like fish is something you generally don't do. I'm not going to say specifically where we got this fish, but your best bet is to know your fishmonger and definitely make sure that he gets, you know, a fish straight to you from the market, if not the fisherman. And you know, an honest fellow will tell you how long that fish has been out of water. Right?
Yes.
As the flies come circling in here.
Or catch it yourself.
Or catch it yourself, which is what this show is really all about. You know, we're in the midst of as the fishing derby, as you know.
Right.
We should get you guys to come fish with us, which would be really fun. Geraldine is like one of our most hardcore, well, I should say she is the best photographer of the fishing derby. She photographs, as you know, like fishermen. That's her thing.
Right.
I should plug her website, but I don't even know it right now. Do you know it?
I don't.
Sorry. But anyways, she's been doing a whole series about New York fishermen, which has been pretty awesome. And she's featured the Derby from start to finish, from last year all the way until this year. It would be cool to have you and Mary come and fish with us one of these days.
Can we just hook the rig up to the boat and just
troll
back
no
and
boats.
Forth?
No boats. It's called the poor man's fishing derby. There's no boats allowed.
This is not 20-knot boat.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Pretty slow.
Even if you live on the boat, you're not allowed to do it. So let me just check this guy out again. So how did you sort of get into the whole, what is it, nautical engineering? What's your title exactly?
Naval architect. I did a bunch of around the water odd jobs after high school and avoiding doing anything else. Mm. And ultimately got a job as a offshore tuna longline fisherman on a 42-foot longliner boat. And we had 25 miles of 6-millimeter monofilament. And
with
we put
hooks every
150 feet, so okay. We had 8,000 hooks.
Okay.
So we put in and take out
that's a dangerous job, right?
Yeah, it can be.
That's really what Sebastian Younger was talking about in the Perfect Storm. Wasn't that long line?
They were going for swordfish up on the George's Banks. Right. Same kind of deal. And we caught sharks, and I've got a scar on my leg where a tuna fin just sliced my calf wide open.
Nuts.
But maybe the strangest, scariest part was the first mate, whose name was Ian.
Yeah.
Turned out not to be named Ian, but turned out to be... Ian was the name of the man that he had killed in Arizona and assumed his identity.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. And he got busted like a year after we got off the boat.
I had a friend who was living in Williamsburg who just... He said he could... That's what he couldn't handle. He said it wasn't the fishing. He actually enjoyed the fishing and the rough seas. He said the people that you get on those boats... are a whole different breed.
It's rough. Yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah.
It's rough. He said he watched seals being tortured and stuff. He's just like, what is wrong with these human beings? I mean, there's some really backwards people.
There's some crazy guys out there.
But there's also some great, great fishermen. But I do think it obviously takes a certain mentality to be able to do that year in, year out.
And when you're out, it's 20 to 22 hour days, at least for tuna in the Gulf, and for grouper, mm-hmm. you're sinking all the way to the bottom, yeah. and then they're like 24-hour days.
Right.
You just work 24-hour days for 2 weeks straight, and then fall over.
This guy, he got paid extra because he was also the mess cook. So he would, you know, he'd be, after he went fishing, he'd be down in the galley preparing meals for these guys. So he would literally just not sleep. I mean, it was like sometimes like, 2 hours a night or something like that. And he said that, you know, that was, I don't know how you do something like that. You know,
you could do it for
a short amount
5 months.
Yeah, exactly. He was a young guy, and you know, probably you just get burnt out so fast.
But you get off a boat, and a guy hands you—you've been on a boat for 4 weeks, and a guy hands you $6,000 in cash.
That's right.
I mean, that's fun.
That's right. What's the word? It's always like you always know when they've done well because all the fishermen have brand new pickup trucks.
Yeah,
right. It's the first thing they go out and do.
And then like 3 weeks later, they're broke.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's funny. My dad actually has the. The cat, the offspring of the cat from the crow's nest, that was the bar in the Perfect Storm.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So we have the little baby cat from that bar. So at this point we would be filleting our lovely snapper. Did you guys ever come across red snapper? Was that?
There's like a whole heap of snappers down in the Bahamas, and there's mangrove snapper. Mm. Which we had a couple of those. Reds we didn't see a lot of, because we were never really in a position to do a lot of like bottom fishing or reef bottom fishing.
Right.
So we did a lot of spear fishing though.
Okay.
Which is hard, and I'm not very good at.
Who is that master spear fisherman?
That's my friend Travis in Key West. He's an excellent spear fisher, and taught us a lot, and his friend Norm, the salty cruiser, taught us a lot too about this stuff and with the rig and all this kind of thing.
Were you guys using slings, or what was the spear of choice? How did you?
Bahamas, you can't use anything with a trigger.
No trigger.
So it's all slings.
It's gotta be slings, which are way cooler.
Yeah, and harder.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, I have one of these, you know, pneumatic spear guns. It's so lame. It's like a yuppie spear gun.
It's
super lame.
Yeah. You put that in your like $80,000 boat to drive out there.
Exactly. It sucks. I'm embarrassed I own the thing. Yeah. But those are huge too. Those are serious, pretty serious. I don't know what size you were using, but I've seen the big ones that they.
I think my rod was, the spear was 5 foot.
Yeah, that's hefty.
Yeah,
that's
and then
hefty.
You miss and you got to swim down the bottom and find the thing and get it.
Yeah.
So we kept it with conch. Conch are much easier to spear.
So long as it doesn't move, it's a good shot.
Cleaning.
Yeah, yeah.
Different story.
A little harder. So then to just briefly, but so then you decided at some point the fishing wasn't necessarily what you wanted to pursue for the rest of your life.
Right.
And then you go to school for this naval architecture?
Yeah, it's like a 4-year engineering degree, basically. Right. And they teach you how to make the boat float and go where it needs to go and go fast and handle the sea and all the good stuff.
So then the question is, are you building your next boat?
No. Well, I would like to, but I've got to somehow hit it big to do really big. Yeah.
Or I guess you find a group of people that all sort of want to do this and contribute.
Right.
But then you're locked into selling them around the world.
Yeah. So I think I need to escape to some third world, like Panama or something, and just build it down there where I can get everything cheap. Yeah.
Sure. Totally. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I am I'm sorry we didn't get like fully done here with the with our tacos, but we certainly have some beautiful ingredients. We're going to finish this off right now, minus our fish that I'm going to go and seriously complain to the guy who sold this to me, because you really can't have a seafood show with seafood that smells fishy. You heard it here. Another episode of Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It.
And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out.